just a little bit about myself.
Obviously, I'm from Scotland. I was born and brought up in a large city in Scotland called Glasgow that has a bit of a bad reputation, a bit of a mean city, a lot of gangsters and so on. But I was brought up in one of the nicer parts of it, but it was still pretty rough at points in my upbringing. I went to a public school. There weren't Christian schools, just home education was like never heard of. And it was a pretty grim time. There was quite a lot of bullying and many other sinful practices that really worked against what my mum and dad were trying to do for us as a family. We were brought up in the Baptist church. Mother and father were both converted in the Baptist church in their early 20s. But when I went to high school especially, the world really took over. I was living very much a double life eventually. The one at home with my parents, and then the one at school and at weekends, which was very different. And I'm afraid I got very much carried away into the world, away from all that my parents were trying to teach me growing up. And I wasn't a very good student. I failed a lot of exams at school because I was just not interested. I just wanted to get out of school and either play soccer or make $1 million, hopefully both together. But eventually, as you can probably see, soccer was not a match for my build. So I settled on being a millionaire. I left school early, a year early, and went to work in an insurance company. I left home about 19 to buy my own apartment and get more freedom. And of course, that freedom was really bondage, as my habits eventually became quite very much part of me. Friday nights, Saturday nights, still go to church, but not interested in the least. And unfortunately, the church I was going to at the time, there wasn't really a clear gospel message either, although I can't blame that for my own conduct. But I can still look back, especially now, and see the Lord's hand on my life, regardless of my desires and determinations. And numerous occasions, He closed doors. In one case, very literally, to stop me going down a very, very dangerous path. So He was still in charge. He was still watching over me and keeping me from my worst desires really being fulfilled. There was a couple of turning points in my life in my early 20s, though, one of which was our company launched this very big financial product. It was an investment bond. These occasions were massive in our company. We hired a big hotel, Glen Eagles. It's the best hotel in Scotland. And we got in a TV personality. And actually, the Scottish soccer team was there at the time as well. And I just thought I was sort of almost in heaven. Because, you know, here were all these famous footballers that I idolised and followed and wanted to be with. And TV personalities and lots of really wealthy people and a very plush hotel, and it was like, hey, I've arrived. That honestly, that's what I thought in my folly. But anyway, the next day went into work and the place was very quiet. Very unusual after an event like that. Usually the place was jumping. It's a big office of hundreds of people. And I asked, what is wrong here? And what had happened was one of my bosses had travelled back from the hotel that night, drunk, driving. He'd gone into the back of a car of a young mother, and a baby, 6-month-old baby in the back of the car, was catapulted out of the car and killed. And I think probably it felt like a sledgehammer had just hit me in the face, because I kind of realised it could have been me. Now, he went to prison for manslaughter, and as a top executive, And it was a very sobering reminder. And really, in a very short space of time, I saw that was sort of where my life was going. It was a very selfish life, a very greedy life, a very destructive life to myself and to others. And it had a big impact on me. So I'm still going out Friday nights, but I would sometimes find myself on the steps outside these clubs in Glasgow crying. I go back to my apartment at night and I'd be lying there crying and saying, I'm never going to do that again, you know, it's going to be different, but it wasn't different. And my friends would keep coming and I'd keep going along with them. And then one, the colleague that sat just across from me, he was 33, I was 21, 22. He developed bowel cancer and died within about 2 months. And it was very shocking again. He was this very ambitious guy, very successful. And that was the first funeral I think I ever went to of somebody I knew. Again, the Lord really used that in my life to show me, you know, you're heading to death yourself, David. You don't know when, and you're not ready. And I was finding myself just increasingly disenchanted with the lifestyle and all that I was doing, my work, losing interest even. Ambitions were fading. And I remember talking to my father about it and describing how I just wasn't enthusiastic about my job anymore, my friends. And he said to me, well, David, have you ever thought that, you know, the Lord is hunting you down? He's converting you. And it was honestly the first time I'd really thought that could be the explanation. But as soon as he said it, I knew immediately that was what was happening. That a sovereign, merciful God was on my case. And if he hadn't at that point, he was very soon going to grab me and save me from my sins and from myself. And over a few weeks and months, really the conviction of sin was very deep. I felt very humiliated about my life and the ugliness of it, my personality, especially the selfishness, I think, really got me. And eventually I realised that I have to leave my job, because my job was, there was some, sort of, you call it low level corruption, you might say. I had to take out clients for lunches and entertainment, and effectively you were buying their business. I realised it was low level bribery, really, and I also knew that if I continued in this climate of socialising, it was going to be disastrous for me. So I was due to give my 6 month review to my boss, and I went in and actually gave him my notice of resignation. And I couldn't even really explain to him why, because I really was not very sure what was happening even then. But I just knew I had to make a break. I had to get out of this environment. I had to separate from this sinful lifestyle. And he was very angry. Obviously they invest in you and they have plans, and he was very good to me. And I said, I'll work a month and make things easy. He said, you leave today. And then he said, and I'll have your car keys as well, because I have a company car. And he said, your cheap mortgage is over today. At that time, interest rates were about 12%. I think I had a mortgage at 4% or something like that. And I walked out of the office. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a job. I had nothing left. And yet, I really believe I was the happiest person in Glasgow that day, because I knew the Lord had delivered me and rescued me. And whatever lay ahead was going to be better and less of a self-centred lifestyle. And I can sort of, there are some benefits to having lived a worldly life. For when you go into the ministry, you're scarred, of course you are, and there are memories that I cannot get out of my head that I wish I could. However, it does give you a sympathy, an understanding, and a compassion for people who are in that life and for the difficulty of it. So even though the sins were awful, God can even turn these for good. And of course it's a continual humbling as well. You never forget what you were, the pit from which you've been dug. And I worked for a little business for a while, just trying to find my feet, not knowing where to go. I ended up actually in Eastern Europe for a year, working with refugees from Romania and Hungary. And I was putting cement into pastors' houses and negative 20 degrees and things like that. Just doing anything. I just wanted to serve the Lord. I just wanted to do anything for his people that I despised up till then. And again, it was just a very back down to earth year, very different to the kind of life I've been leading, but very happy. The Lord was very close. I was reading a lot, learning a lot, and seeing real Christianity as well, because the Iron Curtain had just fallen in Hungary, so they were just escaping really from the ravages of communism. And I was meeting many people who had been persecuted, lost their jobs, lost their pastorates, lost their homes. And then just again, the reality of eternity, of spiritual matters, was very vivid. And it was really there I felt God's call to the ministry, that this was something I should do for the rest of my life. And before I went to Hungary, I did not like my church at all. It was very old-fashioned, very conservative. Actually, when I was away from it, and I was beginning to see a lot of the kind of effects of charismatic churches in Eastern Europe, I began to realise, actually it's not so bad. And I began to understand why they did certain things, why they believed certain things. It wasn't just tradition. I began to be very convicted about it, and again, just the sense of call that was the church I was to serve God in. And of course that involved 6 years of study, because I hadn't gone to college from school. I had to go and get a degree in university and then go to seminary. And before I'd done that, I actually wanted just to go and be a missionary, just get out there with the gospel. I was very keen to join Youth with a Mission or something like that, or Operation Mobilisation, get on one of these mission ships. My father was very discouraging of that, and he asked me to speak to this professor, and I spoke to him, and his advice was, well, you can do that down the line, but you should go and get some education first of all and equip yourself to serve the church. That was really good advice. That's what I did. And it was tough, you know, when you're 22 then, 23, you're beginning to think of marriage, you know, and think, man, I've got 6 years of study, how's that ever going to work? Well, the way it works is you marry a doctor, because in my first year at university, I met my wife, who was in her last year of medicine. And again, it's a funny story, because Sean had been in the church I was going to all along, but you know, she was one of these old-fashioned Christians, one of these very, you know, prim and proper girls, and I'd hardly given her a second look. She wasn't my type until the Lord converted me, and I just saw her in a completely different light. It was like new eyes, really. And we bumped into one another going to a prayer meeting one night and struck up a really good conversation. And for the next few months, we bumped into one another quite frequently, and it was always very spiritual, edifying, and really just the Lord brought us together spiritually. And we married a year and a half later, and it's been the most wonderful blessing in my life. I honestly thought, after I was converted to Christ, that I actually wouldn't marry, because I didn't deserve to. I felt I had I did not deserve a Christian wife. I was quite resigned to that at times, and then other times I felt, no, I can't marry. It was actually when I eventually gave up pursuing that the Lord brought Shona into my life as a great gift that I do not deserve to this day. So we ended up in a little church in the northwest Highlands of Scotland, a little village called Locarin. You'll never have heard of it, but a beautiful little place, congregation of about 30 or 40 people. And the Lord gave us two children there. But our church had a terrible split, and some of us had to take a very strong stand. I won't go into all the details, but basically ended up losing my congregation, losing my ministry. I and 25 other ministers were put out of the ministry for trying to pursue church discipline in our church. And we thought we'd taken a very strong stand and that the Lord would honour us and look after us. And ended up, I had no church for a month, then 2 months, then 3 months, then 4 months. And that was a very difficult time, because when you take a stand for the Lord, you think, he's going to reward you and he's going to help you. And there was nothing. But again, looking back, it was preparation for a call to a large church in Scottish terms. And I think without that period again of humbling, I would not have been ready for that. But after it, realising again my dependence on God, it was obviously necessary for me to go through that valley. And that was just, these were wonderful years from 2000 to 2007. It was just a wonderful congregation to be in. Great elders, deacons, lovely place to live, little island up in the northwest Highlands of Scotland. It's actually where my wife was raised. And we would have happily stayed there for the rest of our lives. Lord gave us two more children. And then sermon audio messed things up. I started listening to sermon audio, probably one of the first wave of listeners. I couldn't believe it, that there was such a service. And I really needed it for my own soul, first and foremost, as a pastor. It was just amazing to have sermons. Like, I could just listen to whatever I wanted, basically, whenever I wanted. And my regular pattern was, every Saturday night, after I prepared my sermons, I would always go to sermon audio, look up Bible and the chapter and verse I was going to preach on, and listen to a sermon that, sort of was my spiritual preparation for preaching. And sometimes I'd get the odd illustration or idea from it that I'd add in, but it was really just a great end to a Saturday to prepare you for the Sunday. And then began broadcasting eventually on the site. And just amazed at the spread and the influence and the emails that we would receive as a church. Again, you look at this little island in the middle of nowhere, that all the planes fly over, and think, well, no one that lives there. And yet, the Lord was taking little messages preached there to everywhere, all over the world. It's amazing. And then, when I started teaching in our little seminary in Scotland, started getting resources from America and came into contact with Puritan Reformed Seminary. And some of them had actually heard about me already through sermon audio. And we struck up a very close relationship. And eventually, Jerry Vilkas, the lecturer there, and Joel Beakey came over. And they were listening to my sermons and the lectures that I've been putting online as well. I think I was one of the first video guys there. You don't want to see these videos. I actually made them in a garden shed in the back of my yard in Scotland against a green screen. And then, so I got rid of the green screen with some software magic and put myself into various ridiculous looking places, really looking back, but anyway. So the seminary here had been watching and listening, and eventually I got a phone call to ask me if I would consider coming to teach at the seminary. And that was just a bolt out of the blue, totally unexpected. And I asked for some time to think and pray about it, said no eventually. I couldn't face leaving such a wonderful church and elders and people. I couldn't face their reaction. Also, my wife had actually experienced quite bad depression following the birth of our third and fourth children. Again, I just felt like I can't bring my wife away over, immigrate while she's like this. But the president, Joel Beakey, said, well, think about it, pray about it, and if you ever, the Lord changes your mind, then come and tell us. So I tried to put it out of my mind for many weeks and months, and sometimes succeeded, sometimes didn't, fighting against it and yet sensing it, bit of a call in it as well. So eventually I had this conversation with a minister who was called to Australia. I told nobody apart from my wife about this potential call. So I just said, well, how did you decide to do this? And he said, well, very simple, Dave. Multiply influence. I said, well, where'd you get that in the Bible? Easy, he said, parable of the talents. And so I went home, I read the parable of the talents, and I came to the wee one talent guy, and what he did was he played safe. He took his talent, put it in the ground, said that just play safe, status quo, don't rock the boat, and here, this is what you gave me, I'll get a feedback. And what did the master say? He said, take away even what he has and give it to someone else. And he'd been told to multiply his influence and had played safe. And as soon as I read it, I thought, I'm the one talent guy. Here is an opportunity to multiply influence. To pastor a church of a couple of hundred is a wonderful privilege, but to actually teach pastors who will pastor 200, 500, and 50 people churches is an incredible opportunity. And PRTS does it with pastors from all over the world. And I went into my wife and I said, Shona, this was 8 months after the first phone call. I said, I believe God is calling us to Grand Rapids. And she said, David, you know I'll go wherever God calls you, but you better get it right. So it was very painful. We love these people so much, and it was very painful. Many of them did not understand, and I don't blame them for that. You can't explain everything to everybody. But everything went very smoothly in terms of visas. We ended up here within a few months, and we often look back, and I just know what a vital role Sermon Audio played in connecting this wee pastor out in the middle of nowhere with Puritan Seminary, and then just looking back over the 7 years since I've been there, just the remarkable doors of opportunity that have opened. So honestly, I would not be here without Sermon Audio. And Sermon Audio has continued to play a really massive part in my own life and in many of the people in my family, my congregations. I've learned more from Sermon Audio, I think, than from any other source. I didn't have a great seminary experience, for various reasons for that. And that's where Sermon Audio is so helpful to me. I learned so much theology, I learned so much Old Testament, so much practical theology, which I'm now teaching. I didn't get that to the degree I needed it at seminary. I also was very shaped by Sermon Audio. Our churches were very, people call them narrow. We didn't have much connection with other churches, so we're very much just every minister was like in a mould. You start listening to Sermon Audio, and you hear the vast variety of styles and voices and approaches, consistent message, but very different. And it was just very refreshing to me. And it moulded and shaped me, and sort of trying to take the best from all the different traditions. You've got, the Irish Ulster Free Presbytery, very strong, courageous, bold. Some of the Southern Baptists I was listening to were, you know, more narrative, a little story, a little bit kind of homey, down to earth. Then you listen to the Dutch Reformed, the Joel Beakeys, you know, very systematic, very orderly, organized. And so all these influences just pouring into my life. And I think I'm representative of many throughout the world in terms of not just what we've learned, but how we've been shaped. In the other areas, how our eyes have been opened to see the Lord's work all over the world and all these different pastors and churches that are broadcasting. We've had contact with churches that, you know, we didn't know existed. And to see people from quite different backgrounds and traditions and yet love for the doctrines of grace and the historic doctrines of the church. The opportunity to broadcast, obviously, has been amazing. And so many pastors in Scotland, I think some of them wouldn't be in the ministry today if it wasn't for sermon audio, because they are labouring in churches which are small, ageing, declining, discouraging. They broadcast in sermon audio. It triples, it quadruples the size of the those who are listening to their sermons. They get emails, they get people coming to their churches and vacation and things like that. And so it's been a very sort of world shrinking service as well, as it's brought people together from all around the world. And I think what I'm seeing more and more as well is, as people age who have been using the services, how helpful it is to those who are elderly, isolated, ill, distant from churches. I actually put up a question on Facebook yesterday because I just wanted to see you know, what kind of response this would get. I was really quite blown away. It moved me to tears really as I was reading. I asked, what would you say to the sermon audio team if you were there, because I'm coming down to speak to them and I'd love to, you know, pass it on. So I'll just read you a sample of these, but really encourage you to go to that question on my Facebook page and read through. I think you'll be massively encouraged at the impact of your ministry. As Stephen says, sometimes facts and figures, you know, can put a distance between you, then you hear from people. Let me just give you a few of them. This lady says, I've been able to listen to the funeral sermons of a few dear departed saints who became friends when I lived across the pond. I also do not always get out to worship due to health woes. It enables me easily to hear good meat for the soul and to hear what I missed of my husband's sermon as well. Another one, two stories about illness preventing people getting out to church. Sermon audio has been such a blessing to me and also to my family. I've treasured those moments we've had together listening to sermons. It's also helped me through many an ironing basket, as each time I iron, I pop on sermon audio and it helps lighten the load. And sermon audio is a wonderful blessing. Another church here which uses it to live stream sermons when they don't have their own minister. Another lady I work as a cleaning lady and play their sermons and lectures while working. I've learned a lot. My days are so much more enjoyable. And the time just flies by. We don't watch TV. We listen to Dr. Murray or Dr. Kenneth Stewart. Paul Washer's shocking message, youth message and sermon audio is the message and means the Lord used to bring me to repentance and salvation. Praise God. Amazing. Another one here, my favourite place to go on the internet is sermon audio. Besides being a blessing to us personally, it's such a joy to be able to share with others that we meet good sermons by pastors we trust. I could go on, but one of the things that struck me again as I was reading through this is the evangelistic impact of sermon audio. And I hear so many people just speak so highly of you all. And as you all know, you are a massive corporation with a worldwide empire. But it's just amazing what God has done with a few loaves and fishes. Kept you loyal to your core mission. and made you such a massive blessing to the world. And I hope and pray that will continue.